Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another edition of Leader Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. A little bit mixed up over here. We've got so many things going on at once here on the Leader Ring Network. The intro music that you were hearing was Max Boxing Live, man. That don't happen. Kind of threw me off there because I was like, hey, did you change the music to Leader in the Ring? Because, nobody gave me the word about it.
Yeah. Steve about killed me on the next round this week, so don't trip.
You know what? I feel exactly how Steve felt on Monday. Now I understand. I understand, Mr. Steve Ken. Okay, man, let's get right down to it. Listen, I'm going to read something really quick that I think it's gonna roll into the topic of what we're going to talk about in the beginning of the first 15 minutes of our show. And then we're going to have Ann Wolf, who's going to be joining us here on Leaving the Ring. And then a little later, around 4 o'clock, we're going to have Big George Foreman with us as well to talk about the sport of boxing, the number one topic we love to talk about all the time, no matter if we're on the air, off the air. It's always the main topic that me and Gabriel bring up. Doesn't matter. All right, so I'm going to read this short little paragraph that I believe it sums up our sport, but it also sums up some of the things that happen in the heat of the moment. And this was written by Jimmy Cannon. And it was off of Nobody Asked Me But. So here it goes. A cowardice disgusts you. No matter where it happens, no matter what form it takes, bravery exalts a man. It can be pointless and done for dirty reasons, but the act itself never has deemed the human race. Although it is possible, the motives may sicken you. Now, what I got off of that piece there is really the telling of what happened at the end of the round where Steve Smoger jumped to save Glenn Tapia, and that last punch landing where you just saw the life basically just shot out of Tapia. Because whatever he was holding on to stay in that fight, you could almost feel that whatever soul that he had in that ring was ready to let go and just fly out like a ghost. And who directed that path for his soul to see the light was a fighter that was across from him, and that was beating him, named James Kirtland. And we talk about a lot here on Leaving the Ring about safety of our fighters. But I think the one thing that we need to point out is that these fighters go in there for one sole reason, to hurt each other. It's the hurt business. Now, whether they hit each other during break, whether there's a low blow, whether there's rabbit punching, whether they pick the guy up with the shoulder and their opponent's feet off the canvas, I think the one thing that we all forget is that this is a fight. And emotions are so much involved because there's 3 months and sometimes even less in preparation to get prepared to the best ability that you can, physically, mentally, so that when you get in the ring, the performance comes across the screen or throughout the arena to the attendants so they can have an understanding, just a bit of an understanding of what these guys went through to get to that point for that violent entertainment they're displaying. So when I see people judge Kirtland for what he did at the very end of that round, which was stopped by Steve Smoger, I go back and go, wait a minute. You know what's funny? That wouldn't have happened if the corner did their job. I mean, let's revise that here, Gabriel. You had a quarterman, and I've gone through this over and over numerous times, unexperienced. Yeah, you probably worked a lot of, you know, fights amateur, and yeah, you've probably been in the pro game for more than 10 years. But it doesn't mean that you can take a backward step in your career. It doesn't mean you can take a backward step in your profession. Haven't you ever gone to work and you get writer's block, or I get plumbing block, because, and then I kind of step back and go, oh my God, I'm performing like an amateur. I need to take a step back and kind of refresh myself and, you know, re-evaluate the things that I'm doing so that I can step back in and do it correctly again. Because sometimes we need to shake ourselves. But here's the sad part is that trainers and even cutmen, they can't do that. They don't have that opportunity to take that step back and think this. So HBO provided a ring doctor. And, you know, I got a few tweets, and some folks were like, you know, why didn't he think, I mean, the ring doctor was looking in his eyes. Why didn't he stop this fight? And I said, do you really think he was there to stop the fight, or do you think he was there for show? I mean, if I had, you know, if I could put a betting dollar on it, I'm going to have to tell you, man, it was for show. Because of what's been happening and what happened about a month ago. So I think common sense and logic tells you that that ring doctor was obviously, he was there doing his job, but he looked a little puzzled to me. He didn't know whether to stop it. There was a protopia crowd. It was obviously the story was really there for discovering another Arturo Gatti. So was this guy really there to protect a fighter that was just being demolished in front of our eyes in the arena? No, I think he was there for show. He was there to look good. But when the heat kicked in, I mean, this guy, he started looking around. You see his eyes, Gabriel? He didn't know where to go. He was just like, should I talk? Should I stop it? What should I do? Instead, what he did, he decided to listen to Smoger, and he listened to the corner, which was Stapia's trainer yelling, he can do this, and trying to do what a lot of trainers have done in the past, like Teddy Atlas, Ann Wolf, Virgil Hunter, motivate their fighter. But there's a difference of motivational speeches and when you just got to say, you know what, you're done, kid. It's over. You're done. We have to fight another day.
He wasn't even making sense. That's the thing. You know, even after the – I've watched the fight a few times, and let me deal with the I'll deal with the end of the fight at the end. But I've watched the fight a few times, and if you watch that first round, Tapia lands his Sunday punch. He lands it several times, but the first right he lands is just everything. He rocks or moves James around the ring with his left hook, and James keeps coming. If you've watched a lot of James Kirkland, and I've watched a lot of James Kirkland over the years, it seems like it's like the Roy Jones thing. Y'all must have forgot how he fights. Every one of his fights is like this. Every single one of them. Even the Ishida fight ends quickly, but it begins the same way with him approaching. Even the Molina fight where he's in slow motion, it's still a James Kirkland fight. Him moving forward, he keeps getting tied up and moved backwards and moved around. But by the 10th, Molina's the one tired and falling all over the place. James is still doing the same kind of offense, straight left to the middle of the gut, straight left to the face, the occasional right, but it's really all about that straight left and just getting pressure and then uppercuts to the body and the head on the inside, or when you have him against ropes. Same offense, same game plan, but just underwater, but he still drops Molina. But there's another thing that when you watch it, and there's a guy that I follow on Twitter, Simbros, that put up some fights of James. It's basically when he began to become a TV fighter, very early in his career, 2003, and it's up to the final fight before he goes, his 10th fight or 11th fight, before he goes into jail for armed robbery few years and basically loses his entire welterweight career. He was a welterweight at this point. Same type of fighter. The left hand is wide, but when you watch everything from there to the present, and I did basically just sat as I was working on my pieces on him this week. There's a trend, whether it's when he knocks somebody down, or at the end of the fight, or at the end of rounds even, James always is restraining himself or has to be restrained from keeping going. There was one in particular where the guy's down and he's literally got his left cocked, like he wants to unleash it, and you could see him kind of fighting himself not to, and he doesn't. But his tendency, looking at that, you got to stop him. You don't worry about the guy he's just brutalized on the ropes. You got to stop him. And Smoker's mechanics throughout this entire fight were off. That's just a fact of the matter. Going back to the second round, Kirkland is basically after by the second and third, he's doing this. He's at the middle of the ring, which he always does. Starts out by just running across the ring, but he wants to get that head start. Smoker never puts him in the corner. He just puts his head out and, like, holds him there. But they're at center ring. So by the middle of the fight, well, what's left of the fight, Kirkland's starting out the fight or the round in Tapia's corner. Just watch it again. Like, Tapia never even gets out of the corner. But back to his corner and how inept they were, after the 2 minutes in, Tapia is very tired. He's thrown a lot of punches. They threw a ton of punches in that round, and Kirkland's still coming. The last minute of that round is all James Kirkland getting to his body. Yeah, he's taking shots, but he's warming up. And he's been off 20 months. He's still unloading the kitchen sink. What does Alex Devia say to Tapia in the corner? He's tired. He's all done in. After Tapia was the guy not really throwing back at the last minute and getting pummeled on the ropes. He's already not in reality. But when you finally get to that moment where the doctor's looking and Smoger's looking, and this guy's telling Steve, you know, you open your eyes. For one, he's telling his fighter, but also he's telling them that it's a sparring session, Steve. And, you know, this kid's going to come back. You're going to knock this guy out. I mean, he's shown nothing in the fourth, barely anything in the fifth. And James, you know, was starting to pummel him. Every time he would come back a little bit, James would hit him like three or four times. This was on the corner, and I think Smoger maybe was there because of his reputation for brutal fights. And
maybe Smoker too is at the end of his days as a ref, to tell you the truth. I mean, we've seen refs.
I wonder. It made me think of this and why I brought up tendencies. Remember when we had Mike Katz on the show, and he was eulogizing the late referee Wayne Kelly, who is the referee for Arturo Gatti versus Wilson Rodriguez, which is really the fight that made Gatti Gatti.
Right.
Wayne Kelly had refereed him before, and Mike Katz said, I was on the side of that, you know, I was covering that fight, screaming for it to be stopped, that Rodriguez was taking Gatti out, and then Gatti came back, and later Wayne Kelly explained, I understood his tendencies, I'd refereed him before, I'd seen him before, and I knew that he could come back. I wonder, you know, and I'm going to give Steve the benefit of the doubt that he's seen James before and knows him well, but that tendency was clear as day in all of his fights. It's a guy that needs to be restrained. He fights till you fall, and it was really the last two punches. He landed an uppercut as Smoker was starting to come in, and that set up Tapia upright. That's the one that kind of
but do you really think
totally
he was,
run his bell. And then the left finished him, and that's what you're taught
right.
to do.
Yeah, but do you really think it was Steve watching Kirtland or watching Tapia kind of falling into this whole, you know, he's going to be the next Arturo Gatti, and just watch him take this beating and going, okay, he's gonna kind of come back. I think that's what kind of happened.
I'm not sure because Tapia is not a puncher. Like Max Kellerman
well,
was
that's
like, this
what
is
I'm
two
saying.
Heavy punchers. I'm like, no, it isn't.
But that's what I'm saying. Did Steve fall into this whole hype that Tapia was going to be a comeback kid? I think he did. And I think that it also shows signs a little bit of the slippage for this guy. You know, I think Steve took a little longer to stop this fight. I think Steve allowed the atmosphere to cloud his judgment on the way this kid, you know, Glenn Tapia fights. I mean, Glenn Tapia, on his record, doesn't show anything that he could just come back around. I mean, it just to me, this was something they were hoping. I think HBO was banking on it, and it was a bad decision. It was a bad decision.
The only thing
decision
I could say was maybe he was hoping Kirkland punched himself out. Because James threw a ton of punches through the fight, you know. By the in the fourth round alone, he set a record.
But if they watched it correctly,
for landing 76 punches in, you know, a 154-pound fight. That's actually a record. And his average throughout the fight was 54 punches a round, power shots per round, which is four times 154-pound average, is according to CompuBox. So maybe he was thinking, you know, he's going to punch himself out, and Tapia, who's kind of in his shell, is going to come back. I mean, that's the only defense I can kind of give it. But other than that, after that fourth round where James has rained on him with punches, how do you let that fight keep going?
I think too that I think, you know, going back, like I said, in the heat of the moment, you don't have time to go back and go, oh, wait a minute, I missed this. Especially in a boxing match, it's just very difficult. And that passage that I said a little earlier, it really kind of boils the sport down, where we don't like the ugliness of it, and we may not like what the guy has to do to get that victory. You might not have liked the way Kirtland finished off Tapia, but that's really what happens in the sport. But too, I think when we've watched Kirtland, we've seen him gas out, we've seen him, you know, get dropped. But I saw a different type of Kirtland. I saw a Kirtland that did continually throw punches, but watch how he would conserve some of those punches. They weren't hard punches.
Oh, yeah.
They were busy punches. You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah. Oh, what he did was, like, he stayed busy. He just kind of worked, and he kept hitting you to the body, and I'm sure they had some velocity on him, but he just let his hands kind of go. He relaxed as he went along, And I beg to differ with people that say he's got no defense, he's unskilled. You just haven't really been watching. You really watch him when he's at his peaks. The Vera fight is a peak. Julio is a peak. And Angulo is certainly a peak fight, meaning he's had a few fights with Ann Wolf. They've ramped up to another – they're ready to step up, and then they do. Where his weight – you know, I think it might have been the Vera fight where he was 154 – and then he weighed in only like 8 pounds more. It might have been the Julio fight. But in those peaks where he's not really putting on much weight, I knew this when I'd heard he only gained like 10 pounds. I think they had him gaining a little bit more officially on the HBO scales, but he could have been clothed. But from what I understood, he only gained like 10 or 11 pounds. And when he's in that range, I think most boxers, they're at optimum. And he was at optimum for this fight. I think Glenn Tapia was too. I think that he just had never been to this place before. The place that James takes people, and so it was, you know, I'm sending you the number, by the way, the prefix to look for. I think it was just a mix of things that nobody really expected it. But watching all the fights of Kirkland over again, kind of refreshing myself, it's strange that maybe it's because of the breaks, or it's because his sheer aggression looks like it just can't work, but people keep doubting the guy. He hasn't fought a top-tier guy. When he does, he'll take them out. But Julio was supposed to beat him. Brian Vera wasn't, but Angulo was favored to beat him. People thought he had no chin. He got up off the canvas to win. He was the underdog in this fight with Tapia, and he just demolished this guy. And, yeah, he took a beating too, but this is kind of what I want to see out of my fighters. This is what we should exalt, is that kind of bravery, as Jimmy Cannon talks about. A guy that's willing to risk himself. And as much as I love Rigo, and I don't fully blame him for everybody leaving, because there's a lot of Tapia fans leaving after their guy just got smashed. Why would they stick around? They might not even have stuck around if he'd have won. They would have gone to the after party. But, you know, a guy like Rigo, he doesn't risk. And I think it isn't his skill. It isn't that he's Cuban or he doesn't speak English or he's small. It's that he's got all that talent, but he doesn't want to just drive it into the other guy and grind him away and finish him off. And it's kind of a double standard, because the people that dog Kirkland as not being able to beat the top tier, or they say he's going to be slurring later on in his career because he gets hit far too much, although look at the punch stats. He held Brian Vera to 14%. He didn't go life and death with him the way Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. just did, at a much higher weight. And Brian Vera is not like a 68 or a 75, and still Chavez had trouble dealing with him. He held Julio to 30%. Total punches landed, and he did the same thing that Tapia. You would think Tapia had landed, but then he did. He only landed 132 punches. This guy's a really skilled fighter that needs to be active so that we can see all the skill. I think he slowed down a little bit, and the reflexes aren't what they are, but 20 months off, how many other guys come 20 months off and win a fight that they're not supposed to? Not many.
Yeah,
so I'm really excited for his future.
you're really quick, too. I think, to be fair, the arena did clear because after Ann Wolf's speech, it made me clear the living room for a little bit when she said, you've took his balls already. Now go out there and take his heart and his soul. I think the whole everybody touched. I even touched it to make sure that it was still there. I was like, holy shit. I mean, the things that she comes up with, man, I mean, that could scare you alone if you're
it's like getting locked in a room with a dude that no matter what you hit him with doesn't stop and no one's coming to help you. That's a fight with James Kirkland. And I don't think people really realize it. It's like I said, like watching the career over this last week and kind of just like every time you see these guys kind of uncomfortable. Like people say, oh, Lara's just going to blow him out. Well, I'm not sure because James has a dimension and you can call him one dimensional, but it's like Trinidad. It's a hell of a dimension. That aggression where he pushes you to the ropes and yeah, you hit him with your best shot and then he just keeps lurching forward and landing hard stuff of his own. I've yet to see somebody really deal with that. I mean, the Ishida fight, okay, but it was three quick knockdowns.
You know what?
And he was still
even
getting up to fight when he got stopped.
Even bringing up the Ishida fight, you got to stop. I mean, there's a point where you have to say, okay, that's already done. It happened. But this guy's evolved. It's a completely different fighter.
Yeah.
I mean, think about this. Lara at one time was considered a boring fighter. But after getting with Angulo, there's a guy. This past week in fight, we had a chance to see a different amount of styles in display. You know, Arislandi Lara is a purist in boxing. What he did to Austin Trout was exactly what Rigondeaux did to Dornier. He shut him down. He made a really good fighter look really, really bad. And with Kirtland, you're seeing Lara, even with Stern, Felix Stern, the division up from 154 to 160, man, it's starting to get really juicy and it's really starting to get exciting. I mean, here's a funny thing. Everybody's talking about Kirtland and Lara, but, you know, I think people forgot that Lara's the mandatory challenger to Floyd Mayweather Jr. at 154.
Well, they're also in separate universes. This is going to be, I don't know if you know that you're kind of cutting out. They're in separate universes, and it's going to be interesting. I'm curious what Ann says. With him being with 50, can he fight Golden Boy fighters? Can he fight – is he only going to be relegated to Top Rank? I know that Artie Palullo had put out an offer from Demetrius Andrade, the WBO title holder, because I think he wants to remain on HBO, and he's got a big kid that's got good skill and just got off the canvas to win. Why not take a shot with a guy like Kirkland? I mean, it's good that, you know, you win a fight like that and you become a star because you have to really prove yourself in order to beat James. I really respect that they did that. Artie's taking a big shot with that. And I think it's a fight HBO would buy. I think if there's a title on the line and a legitimate guy that can be an action fighter in with James, you know, I think Andrade could be that or be forced into that. I think they make that fight.
I think they make the Canelo fight with Kirtland as well, though, because if they were going to serve Kirtland to Canelo the first time, and why wouldn't they do it the second time?
Because Richard Schaefer's a vindictive kind of guy, I think. I don't think he's going to let James get away with. Now, James told me that they're cool, that everything's cool, but, you know, Richard Schaefer once wished me a good, you know, a happy, you know, rest of my day or, you know, a good weekend. I'm pretty sure we're not cool. So, you know.
I don't know, man. I mean, look at Sugar Shane Mosley. How many times he dipped out? How many times Shane has dipped out and come back to the Golden Boy banner? I think they would want to make this because here's two reasons. He left. The second one was, you know, they just couldn't seem to – they really didn't seem to know what to do with Kirtland, in my opinion. And it's pretty much where they're at with Lara, you know, and they need opponents for Canelo. I just see it's more possible for these for them to go, let's bring Kirtland in because they're in so much belief that Canelo is the guy with the big punching power. He's the guy with the better skill, you know. And how many times have they been wrong?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I think they're going to look for a guy that's beatable for Canelo that's not dangerous. for this first time out, at least, that they don't perceive as dangerous. Steve seems to have a line on it, but I don't want to break his story. But I would almost think that, as he had said actually in one of his articles this week, that Carlos Molina would be the second choice if the first choice they have doesn't work out. So I'm wondering.
Well, like I said, I mean, a lot of people immediately after the fight were saying Canelo and Laura, and I said, the easier fight to be made would be Angulo before Laura, and I tweeted that out right after the fight, you know. And I still stand by that. And I think with Kirtland, I still think Kirtland could be in line for that fight, even though with 50 cents. So, I mean, there's a lot out there. It's just now it boils down to negotiations, and it just makes it that more exciting.
Yeah, I'm curious, you know. I mean, there's a lot going there. I just don't know. I don't know if he's going to be allowed in that universe. And if they – Golden Boy is very much about controlling the whole situation, and James just basically severed a contract so that they could have no control of him, and then went over with 50 Cent. Now, you know, who knows? I mean, you know, it's hard to say if
the only way Curlin's out of these sweeps, you know? the only way Curlin's out of the sweepstakes of Canelo is if he did exactly what he did last time. He outpriced himself, you know, and that's
right.
A strong possibility.
But I mean, at the same time, if HBO is offering him Andrade, it's just still two different universes. Like, you know, I don't think Banner is opposed to fighting over on Showtime, but I think there's loopholes that have to go through in order to have that happen. Whereas it's kind of the Wild West over at HBO. If you got an action fighter and you can get him a belt, you're going to get dates over there.
Absolutely.
Just for me, if I had to guess, I would say that Kirkland ends up on HBO and Canelo doesn't go anywhere near him. But Canelo's going to run out of places to run to. That's the thing. He's got Lara, you know, kind of looking at him. People are talking about that fight. I don't know. Probably end up being, you know, someone else, but we'll see. Well, what did you think about Devin Alexander versus we're about 4 minutes, 3 minutes away from Ann calling in. I'm looking for – actually, I think she might be on the line right now. Let me take a look at the number again.
Devin Alexander and Sean Porter. I got to tell you this, man. The work that Sean Porter put in, it really showed. It showed that it upped his skill level. In my opinion, it really just brought him to that next level. I've always said this, once you become champion, it's going to take you even to another step of that ladder of excellence. And I think that you're going to see that. Now, he's got a lot of kinks he's got to iron out. Let's be honest. You know, he throws some wide shots. He kind of falls in sometimes after he throws. There's some subtle things that can be changed and corrected in his arsenal. So that's something he has to go back. But sparring the guys that he's sparring, working with the people that he's working, I think he's on the way of really keeping himself in the talks of being the welterweight guy that's eventually going to get the big mega fights if he just continues to put in the effort and be the student of the game. You know, and like I said this last week about Devin Alexander, what has he done as a welterweight? He is a good fighter, but you put pressure on him, he doesn't know what to do. He falls apart. As soon as nothing goes his way, he kind of just falls apart when you're right on top of him. And Sean Porter just not only showed that he had control of the fight, but he showed that he was stronger, bigger, faster, and he was more precise, and he had a much better game plan. Well, Devin Alexander went out there, man, with just pure talent, relying on pure talent. And sometimes, and we've said this numerous times, talent sometimes can get you to the up the hill. It's just going to get you at a stop, and you're going to tire out. So, hey, kudos to Sean Porter, man. It was a great performance. Devin Alexander, we'll find out a little later what happens with his career. Right now, this was just a big blow to him, you know, his ego, to his team. It was a bad night for it was a bad night for his trainer, Cunningham, because you know, they just didn't seem to get the nod that night with any fight.
Well, I think, you know, Sean's a lot like Tim Bradley. You know, it's not one thing that looks super impressive, but the overall performance, you're like, wow. You know, this is a guy that's kind of versatile. He knows how to work up and down. He knows how to get to the body. I really liked his jab. I liked his compact left hook on the inside. That was his most effective weapon. And I think in the long run, Devin's not going to feel so bad because – I think winning is going to be a habit for Sean. I think he's going to get better
so
as a champion. You know, and I think that it depends on the matchup, though, you know. But at 47, it's an interesting picture over there, because you've got Keith Thurman, who's going to probably end up being the mandatory to Broner if he successfully gets past Maidana. Will he go back and take on his pick up his lightweight belt and defend that? And Keith Thurman just kind of moves in for that. I think I talked about this like months and months ago on the show, that they'll kind of maneuver Keith Thurman towards one of the belts, and he'll pick it up in a box off. And they're just kind of hoarding belts and kind of keeping all those things, you know, those titles in-house over there in Golden Boy. You know, they're kind of UFCing it, if you will. But then you've got Sean Porter, and all these guys are kind of in their own universe over there at Showtime, and they're all being slowly funneled towards Floyd Mayweather. And I wonder, you know, you're not going to get Bradley Mayweather, I don't think, but would we end up getting like a Porter versus Mayweather? You know, it's basically kind of the same fight in some regards. I mean, although, you know, Tim is a little more, a lot more established as a champion, but they're similar.
And a lot more polished.
Yeah, but it's like, it's like getting, but I think in some ways Sean is a little more polished than Tim is. He doesn't get hit flush and wobbled the way that Bradley does. But they're very, very similar in terms of the way they fight. I think Porter's balance might be just a bit better, although Tim is also very versatile. I think they're very similar fighters, and they're going to bear out that way. It's just weird to have a division where, you know, just 5 years ago, 6 years ago, we'd be looking at the same – if we were looking at, you know, how we are at this moment in time, we'd be like, well, what an embarrassment of riches boxing has. We could do all these crazy fights. And we don't really get that because we've got this Cold War. And there's still some good fights to be had, but not really. I mean, like, Broner Maidana is – we'll get to it later, but, like, I'm not that excited. I don't know about you. It's, you know, yeah.
It's you know, to me, my feeling about that fight is a fight that, you know, kind of – it kind of needs to happen. But is it a fight that – oh, wow, this – you know, who can win this fight? Maidana, to me, has shown – he hasn't improved. He carries great power, but if Hossa can hurt him, what do you think Broner can do? We'll get more into that, man. Definitely get into that fight, you know, and give our breakdown and our prediction on that fight. But you know, going back with really quick, let's go back to that with Rigondeaux. With Guillermo, man, you know, I told you this yesterday on the phone. I said, you know, if I was the matchmaker, Guillermo Rigondeaux would be my nightmare. Because how do you match this guy to make him exciting? It's nearly impossible. Because I think what a lot of fight fans forget is the sport was developed and made to hit and not get hit. You know, and when you see people go like, well, he's boring, he's this and that. But after a guy's career is said and done, like for instance, you hear a lot of comparisons of a fighter that's mobile, slick, got great defense. What's the thing after that when a commentator says, always says this, he reminds me a lot of Pernell Whitaker. Now, I don't know about you guys, but Pernell was not a draw. He wasn't a guy that everybody would want to sit down and watch. And a lot of folks used to say he was boring. Now he's a legend. Same thing with Willie Pep. Here's another guy that a lot of folks were not very intrigued with. A lot of folks want to, you know, just storm to the stadium to watch him fight. But now he's a legend, you know. And it's those things that certain fighters bring that are a genius. You know what I'm saying? Where they're a genius at what they do. And Rigondeaux is basically has bodied the genius of being a counterpuncher, an elusive fighter. And let me tell you this. This guy may be just too pretty that none of us wants to sit down and watch. And I think we got Ann Wolf, but I'm going to finish my thought really – no, you know what? I'm going to hold off. I think we got her on the line with me. Let me just double check really quick. ABC. Ann, do we have you with us on live right now on Leaving the Ring?
Yes.
How you doing, Ann?
I'm good.
Thanks for coming on the air with us here on Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm Dave Duenas, and, of course, you know my co-host, Mr. Gable Montoya.
How you doing, Ann?
Hey, what's up?
Not much. Do you want to start off, Dave, or should I?
Yeah, you know what? I want to start with one question, and then you can just follow up with me, Gabriel. And let me ask you, I'm pretty sure you watched the fight. Let me ask you your thoughts about Glenn Tapia's trainer kind of trying to wake up his fighter, and he almost was talking like he was the fighter, you know, saying that he could knock out Kirtland, let the fight get all right. What are your thoughts about that?
I think he was caught up in the moment. I don't think he did anything on purpose. I think he just had never, just like, I, you know what I'm saying, he might have not never worked the fight at on HBO here or there. He really wanted Glenn to win. He I don't think he would ever do anything to try to hurt him. He wanted to win, but he wasn't. If you go and look at it, he never gave him not one instruction. All he said was hold. Or he never said, jab, move your legs, hit him in the nuts, anything. He didn't tell him,
right.
That's the only part I had, that he never gave him instructions, like throw a 1-2 or, you know what I'm saying?
Do you think?
Yeah, there wasn't anything specific. It was just all like, go get him.
Hold him,
you know?
You got him, he done. You never tell a fighter that another fighter is done.
Right.
Ever.
Right. No,
I don't care if you got him knocked out, because as long as they're standing up and you're in the fight, they have a chance to win. So you don't never tell a fighter, and I'm not being disrespectful to him, but I will never tell a fighter, oh, he's done. Never. He's not done until the fight is over. Then he's done.
Absolutely. So do you agree with the fans that, do you think it's justifiable the way fans are reacting, the way Glenn Tapia's trainer handled that corner? Do you think it's fair for fans to be upset?
No,
because, you know, we did. No?
I think, because just like sometimes if you got a little, let's say an 8-year-old little boy and his dad takes him to go fight the little boy next door, and his son getting his ass whooped, his dad's still going to be like, you get in there and kick his ass, because he wants him to win so bad.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's not that he tried, you know what I'm saying? But he has to be intelligent enough. Glenn, to me, looked like he was damn near unconscious on the stage, on the stool.
Right.
I mean, shit. After, I can see him after the fourth round, I would have been like, listen, when you come back here, because the fourth round, he got to let him shit beat out of him. After the fourth round, in the fifth round, after he went out for the fifth, there's no way in the hell I would ever send my fighter back out there, because in the fifth, he showed a little bit. And that was the end of it. And you have to know, he's taking the last 30 seconds, he took 24 shots. Last 38 seconds, he got hit 24 times.
Yeah, it was unnecessary. And it seemed like it wasn't just on the corner.
I say them going, he was done. And I would have stopped it in the fourth round. At the end of the fourth round, I would have stopped it. And if I did, when he went in the fifth round, He threw a couple of shots. When he started getting hit again, I would have been up there and stopped in the middle of the fifth round. He would have never, ever seen the sixth round. I don't even know if I would have let him see the shit, if I would have let him even see the fifth. So I would have gave him one more shot. I would have damn near stopped in the middle of the fourth.
I don't disagree with you. There was like a 2-minute stretch there where he threw maybe one or two punches that were kind of like self-defense or just his body kind of reacting, but James pounded on him without answer for a really long time in the fourth. I didn't understand.
And then another thing that people have to see is that Glenn was on the ropes on our side, so James was standing in front of him, so his corner might not have seen that he wasn't throwing.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point.
So a lot of people don't see things like that. So you have to see if like when I can't see James, so, you know what I'm saying, the referee right here, he's the majority of the ass woman Glenn took on our side of the ring, right? Or on the side we were on. They were hardly never in his corner over here. So, you know, he's looking all the way across the ring with James standing in the front of him. So, you know what I'm saying? But he got to know that James is just standing in front of him and his arms are moving. So that means you're, you know what I'm saying, you got to be have enough of sense. Then number two, I can tell that they don't spar wide open.
You mean just
bullshit
all out?
Spar. Yes, because he should know if his sparring was hard enough, let's say 2 months ago, because what we do, we spar hard at first. We spar hard. Shit, I'll be like, knock his ass out. That way I see how he's going to react. You could tell that Glenn, they came to a place that they had never been before until they got into the fight, right?
Right.
They needed to come into that place where Glenn is so tired, he didn't have to be hurt that bad. You got to know what he's going to do when he's hurt. That's why, shit, hit him with a rope or something. Do something to him to see how he's going to react. All Glenn was doing was, yeah, he was out on his feet. I guarantee you that man didn't know where the hell he was at. All he did was he had a warrior heart. He wanted to stop. And if you go and you pause this chase in the fifth round, at the beginning of the sixth round, Glenn looked at like, what in the hell am I doing?
He's just standing there. I remember, like, the corner man says something to him, and he kind of just absently nods.
When the corner man say, let me see some hop, and he didn't hop, he should have said, fuck it. That lets you know right then and there that he was done, and he wanted you to save him. When he would have said, let me see some hop, Glenn never acknowledged no hop. He never hopped. He never did shit. Right then and there, he should have said, I'm done. Because he didn't hop shit. That lets you know he ain't doing nothing. That lets you know that he, as a man, should have been able to bow down and say, I'm done. Shit.
Let me ask you about the end of the fight. Because there's some, you know, I think the second angle on HBO shows a better version of it, of the two punches that James landed and how fast it is. As opposed to when, you know, compared to when Steve Smoker tries to get in there. It seemed like a weak stoppage on my part, on Smoker's part. But James landed that uppercut that stood him up, kind of rung his bell, and then he throws that after the bell or after the stoppage left hand that pretty much knocks Tapia out. But watching all of his whole career, as I kind of did this last week, going back to the fights in 2003 before he goes to jail the first time, James has a tendency to just keep going, whether he knocks you down or at the end of the fight or the end of the round. He always has to have the ref kind of pull him away. What are your thoughts on the end of the fight?
My thoughts on the end of the fight, unless that referee got his ass in the way, he just stuck his hand in there. When you in a battle, if you have a dog chewing on your nuts, if somebody put their hand right there, you gonna stop punching the dog? Shit, no. He just stuck his hand in between by where their body was at. See what I'm saying?
Right.
Number one, he's already close. So if you ever fought, he's close. You're looking at him. If he stick his hand out there, he was just as close. You don't know. He got real close to him, right?
He's still continuing
to let James beat the shit out of him. Then when he stuck his hand out, James not going to look at his hand. He stuck his hand out like that. So James Carson is going to continue to crack your ass. And if you go back and look at the rest of the fight, right, when the bell rang, boom, Steve grabbed James under the arm and damn near drove him off. So when you want to stop the fight, why you didn't grab James Carson?
I agree.
It's not like Tapia would have hit him. He was covered up. He should have put his hand in and pushed Kirkland away. Not put your hand in and you're turned toward he was turned toward James. I mean, he turned toward Glenn. So it's like he put his hand in the way and shit. He should have hit him.
His mechanics, I thought, too, he also had James, he let James go to the middle of the ring the whole fight, which, you know, if the ref lets you do it, but he never really turned to James and said, hey, go back to the corner before the round starts. I'm fond of Steve. He's a good ref, but I think
he's a very good ref, but you know what I'm saying? He I love him. He's a very, very, very good ref. Another thing that he did was he kept telling James to keep him up. James wasn't hitting him low.
Right.
Yeah, I heard that all through the fight and watching it a couple times.
You know what? I have the most of respect for Steve. He's a very good referee. He done refereed fights before damn near I was born. He done did, but you can clearly tell he knew Glenn very well. Not that he was going to cheat. He knew Glenn really, really well.
Right.
Interesting.
Okay. The commission knew him. The doctor knew him. His corner knew him. everybody in the fighting room, they were giving him a chance. But by you giving somebody a chance, you're going to get them killed. The commissioner should have stopped that shit. The doctor should have stopped it. The corner should have stopped it. If I wasn't chief second, fuck, I would have got up there and stopped it.
Yeah.
The cut man should have stopped it. Shit.
Does that amaze you? And does that amaze you a little bit that you see the doctor go in there and he just, to me, just kind of looked puzzled, like he was just looking around for an answer.
Because, no, they want to win so bad. This man is in his hometown. They want to give him every opportunity, and they're not doing it on purpose to hurt him. They're doing it so he can get just, he might just have one more little teeny tiny chance, and that's what they were trying to do. Give him one more chance. They did it because they love him, they like him, they want him to win. That's why they did. They didn't do it to hurt him. They did it because they was like, maybe he got one more chance. Well, I can tell you, after the fourth round, he don't have a chance. You're going to be retarded.
Yep.
Now, if
James
would have been taking the ass from him like that, they don't have to worry, because I don't give a shit what nobody say. I know James, and I know when he has enough. When you heard me tell James, I said, you took his nuts. When I told him he took his nuts, the fight should have been over. Because all he was standing on was heart. Because his family was there. His mom was there. He's in Jersey. Now take his heart. And when you take a man's heart, what happens? You can live with no nuts, but you can't live without no heart.
He also,
That means to destroy him. That means that he's no less than a, you know what I'm saying? When I said about taking his, it means that, it don't mean literally, it means like all of what he came for and had is gone. All he is on his heart and emotion. His corner was working on emotion. Steve Smolder was working on emotion. It was all emotional, all of it, from everybody in the corner, on and on. Steve Smolder grabbed him and kissed him, shit. Because they care for him, they like him. He's a, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So it's not that they were trying to hurt him. Steve didn't drop the ball. He just, you know, you could tell there was some type of a relationship. Not even saying he knew him as this or that. He's from around there, and he knew him really well. You could tell he knew him really well. You could tell the doctor knew him.
And I think they all knew too that HBO wanted to build this kid as a star, as a HBO star. You know,
it's like in the Bible when the king said, I'm going to cut the baby in half. Swap. And the real mother stood up and said, instead of cut my baby in half, just take the baby. They should have said, instead of cutting this dude in half, y'all can have the fight. Because I love him more than to let him get the living shit beat out of him like that. I love the fighter more than the game.
Yeah, that's very true, and I think it was all kind of set up in that kind of a disaster situation. Well, let's deal with the guy that won the fight. How did you feel the James looked after 20 months off? He set a 154-pound record.
If I say we have a set from 1 to 100 or 75, he wasn't in top shape. He tried to fill in on the first minute of the first 2 minutes and got the shit knocked out of, you know what I'm saying? He cracked up, but I'm not ready to test him to see, you know what I'm saying? He tested him out.
Yeah.
And if anybody know anything about boxing, Glenn, that was his fifth fight this year. That was James' first fight in 2 years.
Right.
So he had everything going for him. I don't care how good somebody is. You've been off for 2 years, man. Your body from the inside out is different when you're fighting every couple of months. That means that Glenn went through 5 training camps versus James going through 5 weeks of training. So during the training camp, I was like, this son of a bitch then went through 5 training camps, and I got 5 weeks to prepare him to fight somebody that they never lost. He understands where he at. He going to come to fight to die. And so during training camp, I had to prepare for that. So to prepare James for that, everybody think that I just train some crazy aggression. I beat him. Man, I am a very disciplined, good trainer. I know what I'm doing. Because how many people you know can take somebody that been off for 2 years and fight another guy that's decent, Now, don't take none away from Glenn. Shit. Decent. They fought five times in a year. He had 130 amateur fights, won 13 losses. And I take somebody been off for 2 years, and I take him for 5 weeks. So guess what?
Yep.
For 5 weeks, my ass was, I trained that kid for five straight weeks, day and night. And I had to let him rest so I wouldn't overtrain him. So the process of having him not overtrain and rest and keep him the day of the fight. Guess what? We trained the day of the fight. He got up and ran, hit the pads, hold, you know what I'm saying? Sparred like three light rounds.
Jesus.
I had to tweak
the day
him
of the fight?
The day of the fight.
Wow.
That's correct. Just to get him sharp, just to get him where he needed to be? Where you just, you
just, we always run and hit pads on the day of the fight. Anybody I fight, you get up and run 8 miles every day. You mean Tim, you can't get up and run a mile? You're going to just lay there and sleep all damn day? Yeah. And then I talk to him. I tell him, listen, we're going to go to battle. They're going to be boxing. We're going to go fight. We're going to fight. We're going to kill this motherfucker. I want you to try to kill his ass as long as the bell rings. And when people say, you really mean kill? Yes. Do I want him to die? No, I don't. But I'm going to try to kill him. And you have to have that mindset. No, I don't want to kill nobody. I don't want nobody to die. But I'm literally punching you. I'm trying to put my hand. I tell James, I want to see some skin on the gloves when you come back over here. Because guess why? If it would have been James Kirkland, he would have been going to the hospital. He would have been going to look at his mom and say, I lost. He would have been, look at what that man is trying to do to you. We're in a savage, fucking murderous sport, and people try to make this shit like tennis. It's
right.
Not. Shit, we punching each other in the face. We punching each other in the damn head. If you ain't trying to kill nobody, why are you punching them in the head?
Exactly.
Until you render them unconscious, or until they quit. And you tell me what, this is savage, isn't it? And they talking about, well, don't use the word kill. Well, goddamn, we punching. If the police hit you in the head, they going to get in trouble. We
right.
Punch
it doesn't make
in
sense.
The head until you get to punch somebody in the head until they become unconscious or quit. Now, you tell me if that, what the hell that is, if that ain't savage.
People like this, like they want their savagery to a point. I think you're right. It's hypocritical. It's very. It's like the
Man.
Guys that say that Rigondeaux is boring, but then say James is too savage. It's like you can't have it perfect when you're just
right.
You
can't have
chaos.
It both. Right. Exactly.
Let me ask you.
Rigondeaux is just as savage as James. He's just slicker with it. If
right.
they when they put your ass in electric shell, they did what? They killed you. Now Rigondeaux, James Kirkland is the kind of person he would put your ass in electric shell with some sponge on your head and. Electrocute your ass. Rigondeaux, he's like, he wants to be, oh, I'm just going to poison your ass and let you die in your sleep. You're still dead.
Right.
That's a good way to put it. You think if they put him in with somebody super aggressive, like a James type, we would get greatness out of him and we would get excitement?
No, he don't do what he do. You can see it in him. He's better because he can be as calm and stand back and just tear your ass up. I like them calm fighters too.
I do too.
I like, you know what I'm saying? You see the real good, you see what they should call the suit science.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Let me
see him, he's picking shots, he's making you not, you know what I'm saying? He's just doing it in a different way. I mean, I don't understand what people, he's doing it in a different way. Country music, rap, All of it is music, but all of it is not the same.
I agree.
Well, I don't think anybody's going to talk bad about Rigondeaux anymore now that they know that you like him. Let me ask you.
You know, sometimes, right, if I was him, I'd be like, shit, act like you're putting your pistols in a loop or something, or, you know what I'm saying, hump at them or shit.
Yeah.
Do something with the people, shit, make them miss 30 times.
Right.
Grab your nuts, sir. You know what I'm saying? You still have to entertain.
How do we get you to go down to the government, Ann? How do we get you to go down to the government and shake this economy back to where it's supposed to be at, you know? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, now that's what they need to tell the Rigondeaux, like, make them miss, clown them. Start clowning them. Start making, you miss, and then just start doing the shit. Do the shuffle and the, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Then the people gonna watch. They're gonna say, "Man, you seen that dude? He did the rope a dope on his ass."
He needs to do something that
that's
it's incumbent
the
on him.
Now, because when I came out, we left out, the place was empty in the middle of his fight.
Yep.
Yeah, that's, you know, well, I think part of that is because you guys beat the hometown guy, but just to, but also, it's, you know, the people started leaving and Rigo and Agbeko just kind of became ushers because they didn't do anything to keep anybody there. Let me ask you this in closing. Is James going to stay with you? Do you think you foresee any more of these kind of leaves and then comes back? And then what is the future for you guys? Title shot, where do you go from here?
I don't know. If he stay, whatever, I'm here. You know what I'm saying? James needs to just keep going doing what he do, and the sky's the limit. He needs to get a few more fights where he get hot and get his timing and get everything back straight, because he's not back to 100%.
Kind of like where he was before, like,
man, James would have been 100%. Glenn Tapia would have hit the floor. Like, he would have.
So how far away do you think that is?
A couple of fights. He's never fought. If you ever watched, he's never, when he got back, he fought a lot. But James ain't never fought four times straight. 10 rounds, 12-round fights. Like, fighting in January, then fighting April, May, then fighting June. By the time November comes, he's going to tear your ass apart. If
he
doing this at 75%, you know what I'm saying? When he fought Angulo, he probably was 80% maybe. A little bit more, about 80%.
When Has James he ever
fought,
been at 100, do you think?
At 140, when he was 147. And then when he,
wow.
when he fought Joel, he was pretty, he was 90%.
That's right. That was a nice long stretch there. I remember because he took on Conyers. Actually, he'd been fighting all through 2007 and then had three fights in 2008, finishing with Brian Vera. And then March was Joel Julio. I think you're right. That was probably as sharp
because
as we've
ever fighting. He had been fighting a lot. Joel cracked. Joel punched. And James had him in the corner.
Well, I guess this is the end of the year. I wish you a Merry Christmas. You couldn't have a better Christmas present. I meant, you've also got a bunch of other fighters starting to emerge.
Oh, yeah.
There's another one in particular that's starting to emerge.
I got this kid. He's about 6'1", 6 foot, 135, 140. I've been training 7 years old. If they think I can't fight, train no slick fighter. When they see him, he's 6-0 with 6 KOs right now. When they see him, they're gonna go crazy. He's off the chain. He is one bad, hilarious little youngster. I'm talking he throws 100, 200 punches a round. You can't touch him. Yeah, foot movement, like, he can move around the ring. He can move around that ring 12 rounds and throw 200 punches. And make you
I can't
miss.
Wait.
Oh, man, he's bad. He's bad and bad.
Well, it's going to be a good year.
Yep.
It's going to be a good 2014.
And then I just like to tell the fans, don't be too hard on Glenn, you know, they corner or whatever, because they you could tell they love him, but they just was trying to get, even the referee, he did a good job. I don't care how professional you are, how whatever, everybody made mistakes, including myself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thanks again, Ed, for coming on Leaving the Ring. We really appreciate it. Look forward to having you. Yep.
I appreciate
it. Look forward to having you again. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
But there you go. Comes on Leaving the Ring and, puts her perspective and opinion about what happened that night with Glenn Tapia's corner and with Steve Smoger. You know, what I like about her is not just because there's a lot of realness to her, but there's a lot of, she bases everything basically off of common sense. You know, like when you ask her about, is James Kirtland going to stick around? She's realistic about it. She's like, I don't know. If he does, you know, we're going to do our thing. She can't predict the future. She's not going to, you know, we've gotten so many other people and they want to tell you the truth, but they have to kind of sugarcoat it, you know, where they'll say, yeah, I think he's going to stick around. Yeah, I think we're going to be together. Blah, blah. But she was just, you know what, she didn't hold anything back. She was like that in the ring, and she's obviously like that as a corner trainer. And you could see she practices that in life as well by just being realistic, you know, and not sugarcoating anything at all. So it was a great interview.
Yeah, I'm a little bummed we didn't get to talk about her nonprofit, which I'll have to mention. I'm going to use this interview for Max Boxing tonight. But she's a person that's really, like, come full spectrum, you know.
Right.
Rough early life, was a drug dealer, realized, I don't want to be a part of this societal problem, literally, and just decided I can't be a party of making people sick and stop dealing drugs. Had two young kids sitting, you know, we all know her story. I mean, to see people on TV fighting, and then she goes and finds Pops Billingsley, becomes a once-in-a-lifetime, you know, fighter, not just a great female fighter, but a fighter in general, the champion. And then now she's churning out her own champions. The pride that she has, the way she talks about her fighters. But you're right, with James, it's kind of like asking about your oldest. You know, the oldest is always the most difficult, you know, the firstborn. And you know, you ask her, like, is he going to stay? And that wasn't the most confident I've heard her, you know. It's like, well, I don't know. If he stays, he stays. If he takes off, he takes off. James Kirtland. I think he stays. And the sky's the limit for them, man. They're really, for her to, that performance, for her to say it wasn't even quite there, it was like a 75, that's something else, you know. I want to see 100% at some point. I think it's going to be spooky.
If we can get to that 100%, if James decides to stick around, and like I've said before, this is just right now, I think James has got to finally realize is that he's special. But you don't stay special forever. You got to grasp it. You got to take a hold of it. You got to take control of it. And her image of who he should be like, soulmates when it comes to being opposite of each other in that corner of the ring. And I think that's what Kirtland needs to do. And yeah, if you say we don't punch him in the face for saying this, but it's almost a father-son relationship, you know, with your oldest, like you mentioned, and Gabriel, you know, a lot of times you're tough, really tough on age now where, you know, he's a man and he's going to stand up what he believes in. And that person is by taking off and leaving and trying to find another way of making things happen. But at the end of the day, we all figure that out. He's never going to figure it out, and he's going to probably let it just go by and pass him. I'm going to be having George Foreman in a short bit here on Leaving the Ring. Around 4:15, we'll be calling him in to the show. But let's break down the fights, man, upcoming weekend, and then we'll go back and recap this past weekend fights, you know. Soto Karas and Keith Thurman. Gabriel, who do you got, man? And give me your breakdown. What do you think?
You know, I like Keith Thurman in this fight. The more I see of him, the more I like of him. I think he's a guy that he's got a high ceiling. And that last fight with Chavez, he really showed that he can move, he can be pushed to the limit, and he can come back. He's got the kind of power that gets him out of trouble. But he's also got the kind of versatility in his boxing skills that can get him out of trouble. And that, I think, is going to serve him really well heading down, you know, this next part of his career. He's heading towards title contention, or he's in title contention. I really like Keith Thurman. I wasn't sold on him. I remember early on going, why are we being fed Keith Thurman? Like, all of a sudden, he was a TV fighter. And there's a reason, because he's got real power. He's got depth of character. In terms of his ability to dig deep and come back, I like him, and he's great. He's very quotable. I haven't had a chance to we should get him on the show. I haven't had a chance to interview him yet, but he's a guy that I'm looking forward to seeing. Every time I know he's fighting, I'm sold. You know, seeing him live, he was down in L.A. on the Amir Khan undercard. I was very impressed, and every time I see him, I'm just more and more impressed. So I expect him to, in an action fight, be pushed a bit to be more aggressive sooner than he wants to be against Soto Karas. Maybe he starts early. I'm not sure, but this is going to be an action fight for as long as it lasts. I like Thurman in 4. Brutal knockout. I'm not sure if we lost Dave or not, but I'm just going to keep talking.
Really? Wow, okay.
What's that?
KO on 4 for Keith Thurman over Soto Karas. You know, I like this fight, and I agree with you on everything that you said about him. He's not one-dimensional. He's kind of shown that he can switch it up when he needs to get himself out of trouble. He's shown that he can take a punch. He's also shown that he can adjust when for himself, but it does take him a bit to adjust with the posture. What he did was that he allowed himself to find the pockets that he needed to fill, and that was great. Soto Karas, man, reminds me of a slower and not that of a fighter like Antonio Margarito. You know, they trained with each other. They were sparring with each other. But he's big and strong. He's durable. And he can't take a punch. Madonna did hurt him, and they did stop it, but it was almost too there to do something like that. I'm not really sure. I know he's going to have to work for this, for a KO, of, you know, to get that. Time that he can allow Soto Karas to walk his way in, work his way into the fight. So it's a really interesting fight. The truth, I think he's really shown that there's a reason why he's on the network, he's on TV, and it's just really because, hey, this guy, he does his homework. He's as well as the winner. But I'm not sure if it's going to be at 4 rounds. I think it's going to be in the rounds, man. 10 or 11. But in the war.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you know this. Your sound is cutting in and out.
How about now? How about now?
Sounds much better. That's much better.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why it keeps doing that. So I apologize.
Well, that's okay. I'm just letting you know. It happened. Just freaking internet. That's what it is. We have no idea. It's probably because I'm being bugged by the government. And so it's messing up your connection. I think this is going to be – it could end up being a war. I mean, and Soto Karas always has more than we think he does. You know, he's going to push. He's going to come at Thurman. But he's also been boxing a little bit more these days in order to get his work done. He boxes early, and then he starts to ramp it up late like he did with Andre Berto. He kind of just slowly got to him. I don't think Thurman lets him get into the fight that way. If he tries to box with Thurman, I think Thurman out jabs him to start off, and he just slowly walks him down. And they meet in the middle, and there's going to be, you know, combustion there. But I just got a feeling about Thurman's power and the availability of Jesus Soto Karas as a target. So I'm sticking with 4. You know, I just think somewhere in there, 4 to 6, but I like the number 4 in this one.
I like the number 10. Yeah, I like the number 10. You know the thing with Soto, though, man, is it's really hard to predict what he's going to do because, you know, we picked against him against Mike Jones, and he's a workhorse, man. And a lot of times, you know, those horses that like the mud, They're, you know, they love the sludge. That's what Soto Carras is, and he knows how to work through the sludge. He knows how to work through the mud. So even when he's getting, he's, you know, being outpointed and he's getting socked around, his head is bobbling over the place. That's the kind of fight that he's used to being in. Where if you outbox him, that's the spot where you need to be. My only worry with Keith Thurman is which I haven't seen him do, but it can happen, is trap himself on the ropes the way Mike Jones did. And that's where Soto Carras is going to get, you know, his upper hand. But what went well with Berto is it was Berto. And I don't think Keith Thurman is nothing like Berto. You know, he's not going to make the same mistakes. He's not going to throw the same telegraph punches. He's not predictable. He changes it up. He changes his style in between the fights, and that's what I like about Keith Thurman. And I think that's what's going to give a lot of problems to Soto Carras. But I think Soto Carras is going to be there. He's going to be game, and he's going to give. I think he's going to give the state of Texas, man, a really hell of a good fight to the very end. But I agree with you. Here's the thing, though. That I'm going to make a prediction on is that we're going to see the best of Keith Thurman because of Soto Carras, but I think we see a bit of Keith Thurman get chipped away from Soto Carras in this fight.
Well, we shall see. Bruno Escalante is calling in?
I don't know. I got his text or anything like that.
I just got a text from the publicist saying he's going to call in at 4:30. I'll handle it because I know we got Big George calling here in about 3 minutes, and he's probably going to talk longer than 15.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because I'm not getting that text. I'm looking.
We're not used to 2 hours. It's funny. We used to think 3 hours was a lot, but now it's like, you know, we used to do a lot and get a lot done in all these shows.
Exactly.
Five guests. Again, it's not Dave's fault. It's my fault. I'm doing this play, and it's restricting. Believe me, my days have become insanely busy, especially planning a wedding that, you know, a week from this week. I won't give you the day because I have snipers looking for me. But, you know, it's all this stuff is just really crazy. But we got Big George Foreman coming up here in about 3 minutes. That's an interesting fight, Dave. I think we both could agree that it's going to be all action and that Keith Thurman's going to win. But he's going to get tested, you think? I don't know. I like Soto Carras, and if he's going to go down, I think that that's the way it should happen. Leo Santa Cruz versus Cesar Cida Jr., dude's more of a super flyweight. I think that Santa Cruz just buzzsaws right through him. And it's interesting. This is like the double standard. Like, everybody just loves them, some of Leo Santa Cruz. And I like watching him. But I don't think he's got, like, really one-punch knockout power. He's a guy that really grinds you down, gets you to the body, beats you up, and stops you.
I agree.
But look at his opposition is really tailor-made to make him look good. He's fighting smaller dudes or older dudes and getting them out of there. His last fight I thought was supposed to be a stiff test. He did go through that guy. I think he's the goods, but give Guillermo Rigondeaux his opposition, and I don't know if I completely agree with Ann. I think he would want to do what he normally does, but I think he'd be stopping dudes that are a little bit – that are like this, this kind of opposition. Mike Penzo, they want it both ways, but he silences Donaire and Agbeko into complete inaction, and all of a sudden everybody calls him boring. Maybe he is just that good, and maybe, I don't know, maybe Beethoven isn't prime time anymore. I don't know. But it's just funny to me. Bigfoot Chumanov, Tomas Kovacs, I've never been high on Chumanov, so I kind of think anything could happen. And it is kind of weird that we were –
right.
Everybody was upset about Jermaine Taylor versus Juan Carlos Candelo, otherwise known as JC Candelo. And this is like the Senior Bowl. This is such a dangerous fight, dude, and to be happening in Texas makes it even more dangerous. I don't even have a pick. I just hope everybody comes out alive, you know?
Hey, Gabriel, I'm going to patch in Mr. Big George Foreman here with us on Leave the Ring. Mr. Foreman, are you there?
This is George.
How you doing, Mr.
I'm doing fine. Life is great.
Fantastic. Hey, thanks again for coming on Leaving the Ring with us. Hold on.
Yeah, I'm hearing two voices.
Well, you know, unfortunately, I hear two voices all the time, but we're just two radio hosts here. Welcome to the show.
It's like me and all the boys around here, me calling George. I hear five say, here I am.
Hey, you know, before we even conduct the interview with you, George, I got to tell you, the last time we had you on, I told you I didn't have a George Foreman grill. I went and got one. I got to tell you, I use it every day, daily. I love it. I love it. Thank you very much for inventing that, getting that out there for us.
You know, that's a bachelor's delight. For the first time, you don't have to get married to get. You can just get married for love now. That's not a cool.
That's great. True.
So, go ahead, Gabriel. Go ahead and ask your first question.
I'm kind of looking at the year, and I've seen you. You know, you've got a chance to do a little more commentary again. But you know, last year there was a lot of PEDs was like the big thing that it was happening. People were testing positive, and we were talking a lot about that. This year, it seems like it's health and safety, and guys are. We've had a fighter go into a coma, and another fighter die. But then on the other end of the spectrum, it's very positive. We have a lot of great fights happening, and boxing seems like it's never been more popular. What's your take? What are you looking at 2014? What do you look at, and how do you see the sport?
You know, we're especially those of us in boxing, we're looking for a heavyweight to challenge the sport. We need something big to hit the ground or to knock someone down. And I'm expecting that to happen. All the promoters, including my son's in promotion now, are looking for heavyweights. I guess that's the way it's always been. But I see boxing in good shape. You know, you're not going to make sports safe. It's never going to be safe. But if guys are in condition and the referees do their job, it's going to be safer.
How do you filter out the you know, like, I like what you said. You know, the sport's never going to be safe. But do you think that there's a bit of a slippage in terms of the commissioners and the refs and even with the ring doctors a little bit, George, where do you think that age is kicking in for them where their eyes are just not as good, or maybe they've just been in the sport too long where they got to get some freshness in there to help them out to kind of scout the things that are happening to these young fighters that don't know any better but to go out there and do their best, but they're not having the right people protect them?
Yeah, since day one, all the way back, we've always wanted to blame someone when there's an accident. We all love the sport. We enjoy boxing matches, football, baseball. We enjoy it all. But when something happens, especially right before our face, we look for someone to blame. And that's not the answer. We just got to look at athletics and sports themselves as sometimes they can be unsafe. We just hope. And, you know, that all of us can be prepared to step in at the right time. It could be the corner. It could be the referee. It could be managers. And it could be just the promoters out there trying to get money. But you can't blame anyone. That's the last thing you want to do is blame.
For you, do you think there is, you know, going to be another heavyweight? I mean, do you see anybody on the horizon? I mean, as a heavyweight, I imagine you're like anybody, like Felix Trinidad probably looks at welterweights and you would go down the list. Do you keep a tab on who you think is going to be the next guy, and do you think we've seen him?
There's a new guy they call. He's got the Tyson Black. he's in Europe, though. And I think,
Tyson Fury?
Yeah, Tyson Fury, and everyone is talking a lot about him. So I'm looking for him to break out and be the top fighter. But there are a lot of good heavyweights around, but there's no need in bringing their names up until they do something.
I agree with that. Do you think, though, it seemed like back in your time, in your heyday, there was a lot of guys during that period to choose from, that there was people to challenge for the title. Where did all those guys go? Like, why don't we have that same volume, you know, in this era?
Well, just like anything else, a lot of money burst the bubble. All of a sudden, all of the big money was going to maybe two or three fighters, Holyfield, Tyson, Foreman, Riddick Bowe, and a couple of guys. They were making all the money, and they were being showcased all the time. It didn't give anybody in the lower rank to come in and make a name for themselves. So because of that, a lot of the gyms that were attracting low-grade fighters stopped. Then all of a sudden the Holyfields and the Foremans and the Bowles, Tyson disappeared, and we didn't have any names out there to take their place. We got good heavyweights. Nothing is named out there. They're still there, and there's a lot of potential out there. Promoters have just got to give them a chance, and they can't come in for big purses. You have to fight small. My first fight was a world record. I made $5,000 as a professional. Can you believe that? $5,000. That don't make you get out there and box all the time so you can make another $1,000. But that's not happening now. Everybody want big money or nothing.
Wow.
That's very true. I wonder what that says about just us as a people, that we've gotten to that place of well, I think
it is not just a box. It's not boxes. It's all of us. We are at that place. Everybody's looking for the big haul in now. Everybody's just looking for everything big. You just got to start from the bottom and build it up. And I've often said, and I used to, when I came, made my comeback, the last thing I wanted to do was get on television because I needed to get my skills together again. So I fought around the country, didn't make any money. $2,500, $3,000 on my comeback, and everyone said, George, we can put you on television. I'm not good enough yet. Give me a chance. And that's going to have to happen in the boxing. Get some skillful fighters, let them fight around the country and get better.
I see these heavyweights too, George, where they're just kind of rushed. I mean, I see a lot of them, they don't have footwork. They don't have what the 70s and 80s and even in the mid-90s heavyweights had, you know. Footwork. They're all pretty much, to me, is a starting pro, but put up on that top level already.
That again is attributed to they are not starting from the bottom, working their way around the country, and honing the skill. They don't know. It takes years. I fought 37 boxing matches. About 36 before I fought Joe Frazier, I had more boxing matches when I fought for the title the first time than the heavyweight champ of the world, than Joe Frazier. Even now, I had, and even the first time around, I was fighting more boxing matches than Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier because I wasn't making any money. I had to go. can't come home with $2,000.
No, and you also end up getting better skills and learning how to maybe defend a little bit better. They talk about the old-time guys. They didn't want to get cut.
But now
they're going to fight every
week. But these guys, they sign with a promoter. They sign a promotional contract. The managers get them, and they have all of these sponsors. They have diamonds already in the, diamond earrings, and I didn't even have a diamond until I was a grandpa. These guys are rich already, so there's no need to become better.
Let me ask you this. It's kind of a pet project I've been working on for a while, and it's a bit of a theory, but that I've kind of like statistically putting together. And particularly, like, even in your second run, there was still plenty of heavyweights to choose from to fight, but that was like the 90s, and that generation was like the last generation. It seemed to be like a gulf in between. There was Lennox, and then he kind of got Tyson, but Tyson was old. But the drug war starts in 1972. By 1992, we've already gone through the crack epidemic. Inner cities have already been taken over by cocaine and other drugs and the drug trade. And things have been kind of gutted in a sense. And you're seeing this era of fighters like the Adrian Broners. He came out of a gym where there was 32 guys that started, and 30 of them died or succumbed to prison or the street. And I kind of wonder if that's where a lot of these guys have gone, and the community centers have gone away, and it's killed a lot of the inner-city gyms. Would you agree that on some level there might be a little bit of that going on, that we've put a lot of people in jail or killed them to the point where we're not
lot of that. You really hit the nail right on the head that time. I don't like the idea that you're telling the truth, and that's really a truthful statement. I don't like it, but that I started a George Foreman Youth and Community Center in the late 1984, because I saw so many young people being wasted, and started a gym. They would come in and do real good, and there was always that element out there saying, no, let's go deal drugs. I had a hard time, but I stayed the course and putting my whole life savings into trying to save some of those kids, not to be boxing, not for boxing, just to stay alive. And I saw a lot of kids slip away, and you're right. All of that has been working for a long time, the slippage and the loss of a lot of talented athletes.
42 years, 45 million arrests. That's a lot. Yeah, that's not the death. That's arrests only. And that's, to me, it's like boxing is very much passed on through generations. You know, the way that it's an oral history from the trainers and the fighters with each other, but also from fathers to sons. And when you start to destroy families, you lose that story of the dad took the kid to the boxing gym and the kid realized, okay, I'm not just rambunctious, I'm a fighter at heart, and he becomes a champion. You start to kill those numbers that, you know, and eventually, yeah, look at the talent. There's Deontay Wilder, Bryant Jennings, and there's kind of like everybody else, and Chris Areola. But where are the other, like, 5'10 guys, you know? So it's I call it the champion of the world. Is
someone needs to write about – someone should write about that. I mean, that's an interesting topic. It should be carried
in. For about 3 months.
Oh, good, good.
Maybe longer. I call it the heavyweight champion of the world is either dead or in jail. And so you're like
– That's a heartbreaker.
It is. It is. Let's get positive. What's going on with you, George? What is on the horizon for George Foreman?
Well, you know, I'm following my boys around. I got a promotion of the Foreman Boys Productions promotion, I'm doing that with my sons. And that's what I'm really doing, promoting boxing. A few years back, I was real successful in the grill business. Someone offered to buy them all. I said, okay. So I'm out trying to muster up other programs and other businesses. I learned to sell, and I love selling. You get me? I can't stop. Even I'm trying to sell my wife all the time. They tell me, be quiet, George. I'm always trying to sell something. And so I keep myself busy that way, and I got this gym in my home because I have a kitchen right in my next to my bedroom. I figure if I'm going to eat everything I want, I'm going to have to work out like a horse. So I'm still in good shape physically. That's what I do.
I think Dave, my co-host, have a little bit of a phone problem. He's kind of cutting in and out.
Motor hat working for you. I mean, do you like it? Is it a different pace? Or?
Let me have that question again.
I said, how do you like the promoter's hat? Do you like it, or is it a different pace?
I like it because, you know, right now we are dabble into it, and you see the fighters get paid. It's probably the best thing about being in promotion. This time around, I can see fighters getting paid, and they have hope that if they win, they continue to win, they're going to get paid. That was a time that didn't exist. Fighters didn't get paid. There was no money for them, but I like it this time. I like the head of paying fighters. I see good athletes, middleweights, heavyweights. I see them in all the weight divisions, so and my
right.
sons, they're learning the sport. I like that.
I want to go back.
Go ahead, Dave.
I'm sorry. I just want to ask one question here, you know, because we were talking about, I don't want to be negative, but I want to ask you something about the new generation of fighters. If you're a commentator, do you think you've been able, do you think, how would you have handled commentating with like an Adrian Broner, Brandon Rios, and Floyd Mayweather? And how they act and how they speak sometimes, George?
Well, you know, you got to let another generation have its day to do their thing. That's just the way it is. I was just watching the basketball players this afternoon, and they have the Mohawks and all of those things. Can you imagine and Vince Lombardi and all those guys were coaches?
Right.
They were the hammers. They had the strong hand. They could control young people. Now the young people pretty much control everything around them. But everything comes to an end, and this is just a generational difference. If I complain about it and say I don't like it, that only tells you that I'm old. You got to be at the same time. You got to enjoy the sport, but you don't want to become an old man complaining about how things were better. You got to enjoy the day because those fighters you mentioned, they can flat out fight. They can really
yeah.
fight. And that's all we should have been watching all the time. And we shouldn't have been just, I call it the weapon of mass destruction now. is a microphone in the wrong mouth, in front of the wrong mouth.
That's very true. It's very true. Like the Rigondeaux,
yeah,
we had Ant Wolf on, and people talk about how boring he is.
Yeah, I mean,
what's
we
that?
Never had that much. Can you imagine asking a boxer who spends 90% of his time in the gym or on the road work, asking about the problems of the day today? I mean, the jokers on the commentators who listen.
It seems like we have more talking heads now, too, in the media. I mean, because we're in like a 24-hour news cycle and the internet. I mean, before, you know, they would write about you close to the fight or when the fight was announced. It would be in the paper, and you would get good coverage. But and especially if it was you or like Ali, it would get even better coverage. But nowadays,
yep.
It's like people just – people will write stories about fights that people are thinking about putting on. That's not even a story.
Yep.
You know? What do
but,
you think?
You know, we're in a new day. The old saying is that you got to change, or if you don't change with times, you're just going to sink down to the bottom of the sea of the way it used to be. I got to change. My kids come in with all kind of different ideas, and I got to keep up with them. I don't even listen to the oldies anymore. I got to listen.
Oh,
to
wow.
Update. You know, there was a time I couldn't stand the new music, but I said, hey, I am not an old man. I got to hear
right.
it.
Is that the key?
I went out to a concert, I think, night before last to see Beyonce. And
wow.
I kept thinking, come on, give me some Aretha. And I realized my kids weren't thinking about Aretha, so I forgot about it. Forget Aretha Franklin and you know, I'm gonna enjoy Beyonce, and that's what they're like now, so I'm gonna enjoy it.
You know, liking Aretha doesn't make you old, George. It makes you have great taste. That's what that means.
Great taste. But I also went out a couple of years back to see the Rolling Stones. I just didn't want to die without seeing the Rolling Stones tour. Those
awesome.
Guys were the greatest. Wow. And I can't help it because they had gray hair. I mean, they were just the best.
Right. Right. Now, I want to see them too. Trust me, George. Before we let you go, when we had you on earlier this year, we asked you if the Cold War between the networks and the promoters is it good or bad for boxing? You said it was good for boxing. Do you still think that now that it's been almost a year since Golden Boy has left HBO and been with Showtime?
Boy, that Golden Boy, that promotional company has made a name for themselves.
Yeah, they
you
have.
You got it. When I saw them promoting the big fight, I mean, one of the greatest fights of all time as far as numbers and money was concerned, promotions are good. The networks, after a few years, they all got to change and something new has to happen with them as well. Remember, in my day, it was CBS, ABC, and the battle. The next thing you know, they didn't exist. As far as boxing is concerned, maybe
mm-hmm.
Showtime and HBO, they could be on their last leg too. Who knows? You got to think quick, or you're out of the business of boxing.
That's true. I mean, I think going back to what you said earlier about in order to stay young, stay relevant, stay alive, you've got to stay relevant. Yeah,
got to stay relevant. Things change.
George, it's a pleasure as always to have you on. You know, to visit with a great champion such as yourself.
Yeah, I love you guys. Stay in touch more, please.
Well, there you go, Big George Foreman here.
We will.
Bye bye.
All right, George. Well, you have a great day, and Merry Christmas to you and to all of your family.
Absolutely, George. Thank you again for coming on Leaving the Ring. Appreciate it. You're in a much happier stage, dude. I got to tell you that. I don't know if I like this Gabriel Montoya saying Merry Christmas to everybody.
Hey, you know, I'm getting married. it's Big George. It's Ann, you know. But I like George. I'm glad, you know, it kind of threw me that you told me yesterday we're going to have him on. And to have that sage guy kind of, you know, and he's a guy that has kept himself relevant. People thought he was done as a commentator years ago, and now he's back on in limited you know, capacity. But I like that. You know, I like that George is staying active, staying in the game. And I didn't always agree with him coming up when I was growing up and listening to him as a commentator. But you know, I think he does kind of take a positive tip to things. But I tend to agree with him that the Cold War is, at this moment, good for boxing. Will it be at the end of next year? I don't know. We'll see, you know. But competition is always good for business. And Golden Boy has been very, very active in being competitive and acting like they're winning, even if they are. But it's good stuff. You're going to have
I also
George
like,
on more.
Right, we do. I like also how he said, you know, we're looking at somebody to blame. And that, you know, this is, no matter what we do, this sport of boxing is never going to be safe. You know, I like the area of where he was going with that. You know what I like about having George is that I could just picture George being on the cell phone smiling while he's talking to us. You know, he's always had that big smile. Let's finish up our predictions, man.
Oh, you got it. Get back to the schedule. And I got to pull it back up because
And this is a bummer.
Today.
Yeah, the Skype is just not, man. It's not loving me at all today. You know, it's because I'm in a different room. I think it might be because I'm in a different room. I'm in the kitchen today.
Well, there you go. I just switched internet companies actually to a local company in San Francisco called Monkey Brains, and I tell you, the internet connection is awesome. I got rid of my Comcast. These guys, Monkey Brains,
really?
Are ridiculous. It's super fast. Like the fastest. It's faster than my internet was in LA, and there's no interruptions. No, like you know, I look for something and bang, it comes on. Bruno is calling
to switch
in now.
Over.
50. We got the Bruno Escalante. Is also calling in.
What's the number?
It is. The prefix is 650.
650. All right. Beautiful, man. Bruno Escalante is with us live. Bruno, are you there, brother?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, well, congratulations on winning your championship on Saturday in Redwood City. So how's it feel, man, to be walking around being called champ?
It feels great, man. I'm very happy I got the belt.
You know, I watched the fight, and I got to tell you, I've heard a lot of good things about you, but I hadn't had a chance to watch you. So when the fight came up with Luis on your Saturday fight, I was impressed. You know, I was like, you know what, this kid's the goods. I mean, everybody told me. And then, you know, when you hear from somebody else, like I heard from Gabriel, and I was hearing from Mario, and I was hearing from other folks that have seen you, and I was like, man, I got to see him. I got to see him. And it was great to have a chance to see you and to see you win your title there. So. That congratulations, man, and yeah, I agree with everybody. You got something there. You keep doing what you're doing, Gabriel.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I mean, Ruiz, I fought him three times now. I fought him twice in the amateurs, and I all together I beat him twice, and I lost him once before. So
That's interesting. Let me ask you this. You know, because anytime you fight a guy in the amateurs. And then you go to pros, they always, you know, a fighter would tell you, well, it was a bit different. Did it feel different for you, or did it feel familiar when you got in with Ruiz?
I think it feel, I feel familiar with all these. I don't think he changed much on the fight. You see, the way he fight, you know, he similar from what I remember before. So it was good, man. He came to fight.
Talk about this year, Bruno, and congratulations, man. It's really, you know, I said I'm watching. I had to cover the HBO fight. I wanted to be there. You just had a hell of a year, man. Five fights, end up getting picking up the IBA super flyweight title, and taking on something of a rival in Michael Ruiz Jr. Talk about the fight itself, and take us through the stages of it, because you won by majority decision. Was it any different than the other two times you had faced each other in terms of how had he changed as a fighter and how it, you know, versus how you had changed?
You know, the fight was just I thought I won like 7 rounds to 3 rounds, and you know, and I got nervous when they said my jury decision. I'm like, what? You know, but, you know, he came, he's tough. I hurt him really bad on the fifth round. I was going for the stoppage in the fifth round and going for the body shots and head shots. So I give him everything on the fifth round, and he managed to stay up, you know, and it was he came to fight, and he was a tough kid.
Have you, you know, your manager's Herb Stone, and your career's really picked up by work, you know, signing with him, I think, late last year. You got five fights this year, but you also, at the same time, your relationship with Brian Schwartz and Mike Basil over at Undisputed has really come to fruition. All the things they've taught you are really starting to pay off, and then you added on top of that the training with Remy Korchemny, the supplementation stuff, and the hypoxic training designed by Conte, or Victor Conte. Talk about all that, and just, did you see all that coming as you signed with Herb Stone, and all of a sudden you kind of start getting this really kind of world-class team around you?
Yeah.
Just talk about that process.
I got a great team with my head trainer, Brian Schwartz, and, you know, strength conditioning coach, Michael Basil, and they always teach me different things every day, and I keep learning. I feel like I just started boxing, you know. I learned so much, and it's slowly starting to show on the fights. You know, I only could see it before on sparring. Now it's slowly to show in the fights. You know, the last fight I throw power shots to the body, and it's great with working with Victor Conti, the supplements, and with Remy Korchemny, you know, all the sprinting. I felt very conditioned, you know. So many people told me after the fight, you could go 12 rounds easily, you know. I didn't feel tired, I didn't look tired, and, you know, it's great to get managed by Herb Stone. I just signed with him a year ago, and this is my that was my sixth fight in 1 year, and so I'm very fortunate that you know, that he found me through Freddie Roach. So it was because, you know, one time last year I was the main sparring partner for Brian Viloria in LA, and Freddie Roach was there watching, and, you know, Herb and Freddie are their best friends. So they asked Freddie asked about me if I could fight, and Freddie was like, just a little. And later that day, he told me just a little. But later that day, Freddie was training Manny Pacquiao, and I get to see Manny Pacquiao train, and he told me that, you know, Bruno, if you sign with you should sign with Herb Stone, because, you know, I do a lot of business with him. You know, I make a lot of money from him, because he was the manager of all my fighters before, like Rudy Zavala, Ernie Zavala, and all this these guys. And I was like, you know, I had to do my research too, you know, and ask people about Freddie, how is he as a person, and everyone tell me that, you know, if he tell you that, you should take advantage, because if he doesn't like you, he will tell you straight up. You know, that's how it is. So, and I was like, this is cool, you know. So yeah, and that's how I end up standing with her. So
right.
Very. Since then, he was like bright future. You know.
How did you respond to me? You know?
Oh, yeah, the Skype's killing you.
I know. Sorry.
There you go.
Yeah.
I said, can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Great.
So what's next for you, Bruno? What's next for you in your career, and or what are you looking forward to?
You know, I always, if you ask me stuff, I really wanted to go, you know, my goal is to be the best. I want to get all the belts, just one champion, all, you know. That's my goal, but for what's next about fights. That's up to my manager. He was telling me maybe I'll defend the title in ending of March or early April in Cache Creek. So, you know, that's
Well, there you go.
Sweet.
We got Bruno Escalante here on Leaving the Ring with us. Bruno, thank you again, bro, for calling in and talking to us here, and we wish you all the luck, man.
Thank you so much, you guys. Appreciate it for having me.
No problem.
Right,
Merry
Christmas. I'll catch you at the gym. All right, man. Merry Christmas, Bruno. We'll talk to you soon.
There
Jeez,
you
go. Contagious, Dave.
I know.
Contagious.
It is contagious.
The Christmas
this mic. This mic is not contagious right now. The Skype is just not working out for me. But hey, let's get in our run in a rundown really quick this weekend's fights because we're almost at
the
tail end of our show. So let's
the final
break
fight
it down.
We're talking about here is well, there's a few actually, but we'll just get to the final ones since we're in the final moments here. Well, you got Jose Cito Lopez versus Mike Arnaudis. I didn't even know Mike was still active. It's kind of a much-needed, as Steve Kim put it in his article on Max Boxing today, a much-needed tune-up for Cito Lopez. I expect him to win.
Right.
And then in the Alamo Dome, the main event, the one fight we haven't really completely broken down, is Broner versus Maidana. What do you think?
You know, I like Maidana. Don't get me wrong. I think Maidana is a strong, durable guy. He's a beatable guy. He's not a guy that's going to surprise us, you know, well, that's the wrong word to use. He's predictable. He doesn't do any changes. He's going to go in there and he's just going to look for the punch to land on Broner. What happened with Broner versus Paul Amanaji? Well, he fought a guy that was a cutie. He fought a guy that's been in the game for quite some time and, you know, knows what to use that. The best of his level with Paulie, where Maidana is flat-footed. By the time he lands his punches, you're able to land what you need to do. I really, really think that if what Jose Cito was able to do with Maidana, and I think honestly, Maidana was saved with Jose Cito Lopez. To me, they kind of stopped it prematurely. They didn't even give him the chance to kind of recoup with the way he did with Canelo. It was a real tough fight for a guy like Maidana who's, you know, has all this power, who's really supposed to, you know, knock you out of there with this one punch. I think going in with Broner, I think he's going to have a tough time with Broner's jab. I think he's going to have a tough time with Broner's shorter punches. And he's going to have a tough time with Broner's speed. You know, the one thing we haven't seen from Broner is his chin. So I think that's the only thing out there that we're waiting to find out. Can he take Madonna's punch? And can Maidana take a big Broner's punch? I mean, Broner just looks bigger and bigger, man. He looks like Andre Berto, you know, just a really compact guy, but more fluent and a lot better in terms of keeping his punches in the pocket where Berto falls apart. You know, he starts winging, he starts throwing wide. Broner really doesn't do any of that. And Broner will walk you down. So it's a good, interesting fight, but I'm picking Broner by stoppage in the later rounds.
I wonder about Broner at 47 because he didn't – does he hit hard at 47? I mean, does he hit solid?
I think
or does he hit like he can knock you out? And is that fast at 47?
Yeah, but you know what? His power keeps you humble. I think that's the overall. I mean, Soto Karas is a big welterweight guy, you know, and he was able to damage Soto Karas. Jose Cito Lopez is still, I think he's filling that division as well. What Broner and Maidana, what Golden Boy's been doing is been feeding them blown up welterweights, you know. So you got two guys that really haven't really established themselves as blown, you know, as welterweights, you know. And it's a good matchup in that terms. It's equal because these guys are not at that welterweight limit. They can make the limit. They can walk around that limit. But you're absolutely right. Do they have the power to stay in that welterweight division? I don't know because either one of these guys is not going to tell us that story if they do belong in the welterweight division by fighting each other.
I think Maidana has kind of grown into it. You know, in the Alexander fight did show that speed is always going to trouble him, but you know he finds ways to deal with that, like he did with Amir Khan. like he did, you know, well, like he did with Amir Khan. He can kind of cut it off and kind of get you, even in spots with Alexander, he kind of got it there. But I think that I picture Broner winning, but like, it's one of those ones where I kind of lay everything out, and nothing actually stands out and says, but Broner is going to win, other than he's with Al Heyman, but, you know, so is Maidana, but he's obviously just a B-side in this. Everybody is hoping Broner wins because he's becoming a brand, and I think Golden Boy would like him to be some sort of a pay-per-view guy, you know, and then they would have Canelo, they would have Floyd for however long he's left in these next few fights, but they would have Broner for the future, and they could develop him that way.
Right.
But at the same time, like, I don't believe in the power. Like, he didn't – he busted Paulie up a bit, but, I mean, Paulie held his own in that fight. And Paulie got blasted out by Amir Khan, who, you know, Maidana hurt pretty badly. I mean, he put Maidana down early, but he's running for his life by the end of that fight. So I wonder, you know, and I know it doesn't always work that way, but I don't know if Broner's going to actually show Maidana something he hasn't seen. And if I had to pick a style – to beat Broner, it's going to be a guy that goes for broke, maybe shows a few different looks, but has legitimate power that he can hit you on, like the way Kirkland does, hit you on the elbows, hit you in the chest, hit you wherever you will allow him to hit you, and you think, okay, I'll observe this and I'll come back, and then after a few rounds you can't. I'm wondering if Maidana, you know, if he employs that kind of strategy, will be able to do that, but we'll see. I think he's a little more versatile than we're giving him credit for, and with the Garcias, he's been fine-tuned in a nice way, so it's an interesting fight.
It's interesting, but, you know, I go back and watch the Broner and DeMarco fight, and DeMarco and what he brought into this fight was a great chin. Donna did, which was creating distance when he wanted to do it, is pretty much what we're going to see against Maidana. It's really with Maidana, what does he catch up by giving himself angles and not do what DeMarco did, which is just stay in front of him. I'm not really sure. And Maidana's, he's acceptable to get uppercut by Broner. And that's what I look at. You know, I'm looking at what Broner can do. Broner has that shoulder where he uses a shield. He doesn't do it as well as his big brother Floyd Mayweather, but he does it well enough against guys like Maidana and DeMarco, you know, who are going to be winging big punches where you have time to protect yourself with that shoulder. So that's why, you know, I'm picking Broner. But like I said, DeMarco brought in a great chin, but he didn't bring in the punching power that that Maidana can bring. But like you said, too, we don't really know whether or not. Is he the big puncher? He's at 140, at 170. I'm not sure, but we're going to find out. We're going to find out on Saturday.
I think, too, what we'll find out is if, you know, what they're going to do with him at welterweight. If he gets away with one and it's not very entertaining because he's got to move to stay away from Marcos Maidana, then maybe he does move back to 40, you know, goes to 40 or goes to 35, and they graduate, you know, Garcia up to 47, and he can kind of do some business at 40 while he and pick up another belt and another division. You know, then they'll call him a four-division champion, even though, yeah, just the resume is very thin with Adrian Broner, considering the amount of greatness that they're giving him and pound for pound and all that. You know, it just – it's hard for me to – I was watching Russell Brand, a comedian, pretty funny guy, and he's kind of coming into his own as a comedian. He did this Messiah Complex stand-up routine, and he said something very interesting about advertising. He said anything that needs advertising is probably something you don't need. And you look at the brands in boxing, and when James Kirkland fights, I think we all know as fight fans, however you feel about his technique or what he's going to do, you're going to watch. It's kind of like food to a boxing fan. It's just, you got to see it. Adrian Broner, I mean, he does a lot of, I'm the greatest. Everybody wants to be in my position. I'm the best. He puts out the sex tape, all the antics on Twitter, all of it. But at the end of the day, do we really need what he gives us in the ring? Or are they really just selling and selling and selling? My instinct is like sort of like when I'm in a boxing gym and somebody keeps hounding me about a prospect that I really got to see. man, if I haven't heard of him and you're selling me this hard, what's wrong with him? That's what I always think. I don't like the hard sell.
Yeah.
With Broner, real hard sell, even with the Malignaggi fight, look at those cards.
Right.
I kept watching the fight going, you know, Paulie's doing kind of really good, like a lot better than everybody said he was. He just doesn't have any power. And Broner's walking through it. He's still getting hit. Is he going to shoot my Donna that way?
Quite his opponent.
Yeah, it is.
You know,
so,
I mean,
know, it is what it is. But the hard sell always makes me go, like Arsenio,
hmm.
So we'll see.
Things that make you go, hmm, yeah. Really, really quick before we go off the air, we got four more minutes left, but I want to talk about one fight and make a prediction. Angel Asuna versus Hugo Centeno. This is really under the radar. This is a good fight, a really good fight. You know, Hugo Centeno, we've been able to watch his progression through leaving the ring. But this kid Asuna from the Timothy Bradley side of Southern California, this guy's making a name for himself as well. I don't know if you had a chance, Gabriel, to watch this kid, but this kid is a mauler. He comes forward. He's got good head movement. He cuts off the ring really good. He does a lot of body work, and man, when he throws those uppercuts, it's a thing of beauty. But what I like about him is he's a switch hitter. He's a switch hitter. He can go from southpaw, conventional. He does everything in the mix, and he's been knocking everybody out that's been put in front of him. He doesn't have a standout record. You know, he's lost in the past, but with this year, you know, he knocked out Eddie Hunter. Rodriguez, and he did lose to Paul Mendes, but he's a guy that can give Hugo a lot of problems. I think this fight here for Hugo is a make 'em break 'em type of deal. They've been putting him in tough, and I think this is going to be the toughest right now today for his in terms of opponents. This kid, assuming nobody knows about him, but he's kind of a hidden gem for out there. And you know, I'm going to go on a limb, man. I'm going to win this fight against Hugo Centeno. I don't think Hugo has the power to keep him off. And Asuna has fought taller guys. He's only 5'10" or 5'11", but he gets low. He knows how to move his head before he works that body. And the one thing I like about this kid is he either finishes with a body shot or he finishes with an uppercut. And I think that's where Hugo's going to have to be on his top game, which is to not allow this kid Suno to close the distance, to not allow this kid Suno to back him up into those ropes. Because once he gets you on those ropes, he kind of mimics a little bit of James Kirtland. He's all over you, and he won't let you out of there. It's going to be a great fight for Fantasy Springs for Fantasy Springs Casino and stuff. So if you have a chance, fight fans, make sure you look out for this fight. That fight's going to be the standout, I believe, for Solo Book Sale. I think it's on Solo Book Sale or Fox One. One of those. Either way, look for it. It's going to be a hell of a fight. Gabriel?
Yeah, that should be Dave with the upset special pick. It should be a fun one. I think you're right. That fight is going to be tough. You got David Price coming back this weekend against Evgeny Orlov, Jürgen Brammer versus Marcos Oliveira for the vacant WBA title at 175. It's interesting. Amir Mansour versus Kelvin Price as well, and Lionel Thompson versus Ryan Coyne. Light heavyweights and heavyweights in action from Atlantic City, New Jersey on NBC Sports. Packed weekend. Kevin Mitchell versus Burnett Zamora as well, and Leonard Bundo versus Lee Purdy on Sky Sports. So if you're a fight fan, this is going to be one of the last feasts of the year. So enjoy it. Dave, as always, fun show, and I'll catch you soon.
Yeah, and we're going to probably go back to our 3 hours. We had a lot of stuff to cover today. We didn't even have a chance to even kind of break the ice of the things we wanted to talk about. But anyways, fight fans, hey, enjoy your guys' weekend. You know the saying, you know, don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. This is Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya. We're out.
Peace.